The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Are we all ready? Everybody sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Then I'll begin. Hello, everyone. This is Colin Schindler, along with John Holmes and Patrick Barclay, welcoming you back to another edition of Football Ruined My Life. Now, there's an idiom that states, I am not my brother's keeper, and I always thought, whenever I saw Kasper and Peter Schmeichel together, even though, as you have immediately spotted, it doesn't quite work because they were father and son and not brothers. Mm. And the same could be said of Roy and Gary Bailey of Ipswich Town and some team in the northwest of England, respectively. The recent death of Bobby Charlton caused all of us to recall the remarkable fact of two brothers playing together and winning the World Cup together. Now, I was fortunate enough to be asked by Mike Summerby to write his biography, a decision made easier by the fact that both his son Nicky and his father George also play professional football. And then there's the Redknapps and the Lampards and the Greys of Leeds United, and who could possibly forget the Hibbett brothers of Wolves and Newcastle? Paddy, who comes to mind when you think about footballing siblings?
Well, I'll start off with my brother's keeper, which was Peter and Ron Springett. Brothers and keepers.
Yes, that does work, doesn't it? Silly me. Yes.
That actually works.
Yes.
And I'm sure there might be others, I don't know. But, yeah, what was the question? Because I was so busy thinking up my smart R's.
Well, when I say the word footballing siblings, and I include parent, child, as well as brothers, who comes to mind? Although you told me, the Springetts come to mind.
Who do I think of? Well, I don't know why, but I think of perhaps not the greatest example, but Brian and Nigel.
Love. Oh, yes.
Very, very different players, because Nigel's pace was all between his ears. And his dad was apparently very, very quick and a great goal scorer, whereas Nigel, though he could score a goal, was, I think, at his best just off the front, threading in the little balls, Beardsley style. So I think of them, but, you know, there are thousands of others, and we're going to have a lot of fun today.
John, the geneticism of it all. I mean, there are enough of them around to suggest that somehow it's an inherited gene. Do you accept that?
Yeah, I suppose so. The one that comes to mind, which is a bit of a bizarre one, was John and Dave Hollins. John, of course, played for England, was a midfield player, and his brother, Dave, was a goalkeeper and played for Wales. Dave was born in Wales. Another example of this sort of dual nationality that came up was Joe and Jerry Baker, wasn't it? They were both actually forwards. One of them was born in US, one was born in England, even though they both called themselves Scottish, I suspect.
That's right.
I suppose the most famous sporting brothers of all to have played football for England are the Compton brothers.
Did Leslie play for England?
I have a feeling he played a wartime international, though I may be wrong. Mm. I think Dennis only played wartime international football as well. But there were the Robledo brothers, who were quite interesting, came from South America, played for, I think, Mansfield and Newcastle in the early 50s.
And Barnsley, famously Barnsley.
Barnsley, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The Greenoffs of recent memory, both playing for Manchester United, I think, simultaneously one dashing midfield player, the other a terrific striker. The Hibbett brothers, yes, one at Wolves and one at... Kenny is still alive, but as I understand it, Terry died some time ago. Terry was a number 10, number 11 for Leeds in the early days, then went on to Newcastle.
Interesting, the Welsh seem to have quite a lot. I think of the old Church brothers, I think of the Charles brothers.
Yes.
You know, they're never mentioned these days, which is to an extent. Either Old Church in my imagination Paddy, being the senior fellow here, might know better. I always thought Alvar Aldrich was an exceptionally gifted inside forward because he was Welsh. Yeah. Never really received his due reward.
That's my recollection, although, you know, I was very young and I never saw him in the flesh. But I could certainly imagine him. And I agree with you. I mean, Oldchurch was, correct me if I'm wrong, but he would have been in the Great Wales team of 58, which did so well in the World Cup.
Len was his brother, was a winger.
Whereas Ivor was a guy who could craft, a real technical wizard.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. I mean, Len was no mug. Len must have played for Wales a few times.
There were also the Rowley brothers, both good goal scorers.
And both with thunderous shots. So there was something in the genetics that made them hit the ball as if they were Peter Lorimer, who I don't think had a brother. But there's another set of brothers that get overlooked because one was unable to fulfill himself due to tragedy. And that's the Blanchflower brothers.
Oh, yes, of course.
Jackie Blanchflower was one of the young men whose career was cut short. He wasn't killed, but he was so badly injured that he never played again.
You didn't say at the Munich air. I think we have to explain, is that the Munich air crash?
Sorry, I beg your pardon. At the Munich air crash of February 1958, he was a wonderful player because he could play centre-half, midfield, and he was a footballing centre-half. He was a bit like the player that I suppose when I first saw Harry Maguire at Sheffield United, I thought he might be a footballer who just happened to play centre-half. Jackie Blanchflower was very much like that. And Danny, of course, was the great captain and architect of the truly great Spurs double team of 1961-62.
There were also the Froggatt brothers, were there not? Redfern and
Jack.
Jack, who played as a centre-back, centre-half, actually, and as a left-winger, which is a bizarre mixture there, but he managed to do that. There did seem to be more in that age than there are now. At Leicester, at one stage, we had three Riley brothers, Howard Riley and his two younger brothers, one of whom called Bob, the other one I can't remember. And Colin Appleton also had a brother who played for the club. I suppose in that respect it happened. But before the war, there were, you know, the Milburns. There were an enormous number of Milburns playing who were brothers. Jackie's brother Stan, wasn't it, who played for ages and ages.
And the mother of the Charltons, her sister, yes, who apparently was a marvellous player.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And she was a good coach, obviously.
A very good coach, yes.
I also recall, if you go abroad, didn't Uwe Seeler have a brother who played as
well?
Yeah,
I think he did. But if you go abroad, you find a top-class player who had two sons who ended up playing top-class football as well, including in the Premier League. And by that, I mean Abdi Pelé, whose sons, André Ayew and the other one, play in England.
Jordan Ayew, is it?
Jordan and André Ayew. Yep. They are the sons of Abdi Pelé.
There were two Van der Kerkhoffs in the great Dutch side.
René and Willy.
Yeah.
Which father and son were truly great? One was one of the all-time greats of Italian football. And
Maldini.
Maldini pere fils. Maldini's father,
Cesare,
won the Champions League in 63 at Wembley Stadium when Milan beat Benfica, I think, and was a great player and later manager of Italy, or certainly the under-21.
Yes, he was. He was the chain-smoking manager of Italy. Always had a fag in his mouth.
And I believe, of course, that Mazzola, Sandro Mazzola, his father died in the Superga aircraft crash.
That's right. And of course, obviously, I missed out, anybody doesn't know, Cesare Maldini's San Paolo was arguably the best left-back of all time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always find it more problematic when they're brothers rather than father-son, but there is always a sense which one of them is inevitably going to be better than the other one. Mm-hmm. And you always wonder how they get on with each other, given the fact that one of them, I mean, it seemed that all the skill went to Bobby and Jack was a, you know, workman-like centre-half who got slightly lucky because he was exactly what Alf was looking for at that time to shore up the centre of defence. Mm-hmm. But Bobby was a world-class player. But I don't think there was any sense emanating from Jack that he resented the fact that Bobby had, you know, 98% of the skill allotted to the family and he had the 2%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were very good to each other in that sense.
Yeah. Well, they were, although, of course, we've talked about this, they never really had much connection in later life, and indeed became focus of a lot of speculation and press, that they'd fallen out rather, which always seemed rather tragic. But they said that the relationship started out, Jack would go off shooting and fishing and poaching, and Bobby was interested in playing football. They were very, very different characters, weren't they?
Yes. I think there's a story about, lovely story about United playing Leeds and Leeds having beaten them, I think possibly in one of those semi-finals that went on forever in the mid-60s. It was the time when Jack was first picked for England. And he'd just been told, and he went into the United dressing room after Leeds had beaten them 1-0 and told Bobby that he'd been picked for England. He'd see him at Wembley, whatever. And Bobby was alleged to have retorted, "That's very nice, Jack. I'm very pleased for you. Now, for God's sake, fuck off out the dressing room."
Could well have been. I'm amazed that we've got this far without mentioning, I remember I read once that the most common surname in English football in those days was Clark. There were more Clarks than anything else. And of course, one of the great footballing families was the family of which Alan Sniffer Clark was a member.
Wayne.
Now, Wayne won an English title, didn't he? With
He's at Everton, wasn't he?
At Everton. I'm sure he won
a title with Everton. I thought
the season after Gary Lineker left, a very poor side, Everton side, won the title in 1987. And I think Wayne might have been, you know, along with Inchy Heath. Inchy Heath and people like that.
Ramshaw.
Yes, it was they were good players, but not.
And there were the Morgan twins who famously played
Roger
left and right wing for QPR. And then both went to Spurs, didn't they?
Yeah. And I'm also amazed that we got this far without mentioning the surname Allen, A-L-L-E-N.
Oh, yes, of course.
Which would include
Les, Clive,
and Paul, who became the youngest player to be brought down by Willie Young in a cup final.
Yeah.
And whose dad won the double in that famous Spurs side. Yes.
His name was Les, and he
and fouled Len Chalmers to get
it. Oh, was it him? He did it. Oh, right.
It was, God,
you mentioned that in a previous episode,
yeah.
I may have done it.
You'll never let that one go, will you?
Yeah, we'll get to the subject of Dundee and Erste FC Köln very shortly, of course. Which, incidentally, you may, this is a complete aside, but for those who watch television or watch on streaming, Irving Welsh, the novelist, wrote Crime, which has been televised recently. And the first series, one of the crucial events of the detective, played wonderfully by Dougray Scott, centres on Dundee destroying Hart's dream of winning the title.
Oh,
with two goals in the last 7 minutes.
Albert Kidd scored them, and the Hearts.
Which year was this?
86, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, it was featured in the series. That apparently ruined his life. He always remembered that, the detective. Yeah.
I think it's always rather sad when the father son. It's difficult enough with brothers, but worse with father son. One of the books I wrote was about the Summerby family. The grandfather or father played very few games, but was a professional footballer in the 30s. But then Mike becomes a star in the 60s and 70s. And his son follows exactly the same path. He starts at Swindon and goes to Manchester City. Now, Mike happened to arrive at the same time as Francis Lee and Colin Bell, and it rather made a bit of a difference. Whereas Nicky, the son, arrived at the same time as a lot of players that nobody's ever heard of and was in a poor side. And the fact remains that he got the wrath of the crowd. I'm afraid, I do think, rather unfairly, because you'll never be as good as your father, was what they always said. Well, it's not his fault, really. He was being blamed, in a sense, for the weaknesses of others. But it must be difficult for sons who can't live up to their fathers. If they exceed them, like the Haaland, you know, Alfinger Haaland and Erling Haaland, that's fine. I think Frank Lampard, Frank Jr. was probably a better player than Frank Lampard Sr.
Oh, much.
That was always cited to me, the Lampards, as an example of the sort of natural improvement of the species in terms of looks between Frank and his son. Of course, there's another. We've got a contemporary case of this with Bellingham, whose brother also went to Birmingham, then went to Sunderland. Now, Jude Bellingham looks like he's going to be absolutely terrific. Could be one of the all-time greats. His brother's not quite there yet. And that will be interesting to see how that relationship develops. He will inevitably be living in the shadows. I remember one moment of high lunacy at Leicester when Lineker was doing particularly well at Barcelona and his brother, Wayne, was scoring lots of goals in local football. And the secretary at Leicester, Alan Bailey, actually spoke to me and said, I think we'd be mad not to sign him, John. It would look foolish if he went somewhere and did really well. I mean, fortunately, they didn't pursue that.
Well, to keep Leicester on top of the agenda, did you ever talk to Kasper Schmeichel about his father and the comparison between the two? Because they were both very, very good goalkeepers, weren't they?
Both were very good goalkeepers. It was believed they didn't get on particularly well later on because of his father's divorce. They became a little bit estranged. And the other players told me that Kasper didn't talk much about his father. His father came and watched him a lot at Leicester, but there was no sense that they were particularly close. I mean, that's interesting. You've got the other example. If you go to cricket, Stuart Broad and his father, Chris, because the parents were divorced at an early age. And Stuart was brought up 95% by his mother and always attributes a lot of his success to his mother. Although he and his father are now get on pretty well.
Mm, good. I'd like to go back to the Mancunian theme for Colin in a moment. But first of all, Johan Cruyff. And of course, he had a son who got nowhere near to living up to his...
Jordi
Cruyff. And by the way, Jordi Cruyff was one of the nastiest little shits I met when I was a football journalist. And I often wonder...
Oh, do tell us, Paddy, why have you come to that conclusion?
Well, Deportivo Alaves got to the final against Liverpool when Gerard Houllier was manager of Liverpool. So I went over to Vitoria Gasteiz, which is the town where Alaves play. And I was welcomed by the club. I remember there was a wonderful manager, a little guy who'd been around a while, and he couldn't have been more friendly. But whatever I wanted, I could have, you know. So I said, well, I'd like to interview Jordi Cruyff, please. He said, go and speak to my agent. I said, I haven't got time. Cut a long story short, he was very surly. And it was all I could do to stop myself from saying, well, your dad had more talent in his toenails than you've ever had, and running away again before he could hit me. He was actually carrying a snooker cue at the time because they were playing pool in the recreation room at Alaves's football ground. And I did genuinely wonder if he had a chip on his shoulder about not being his dad, because Jordi was very, very quick and made a career out of it. But anyway, that's one. But going back to Manchester, there was a son who actually outshone his father, in my opinion. Though, Colin, you'll correct me if I say that Peter, in his early career, Peter Barnes, outshone Ken, who, although Ken played in the famous cup final, the Troutman Cup final, I think, didn't he, Ken Barnes?
Yeah. Well, the point about Ken Barnes was it was a much less showy position he played. He played right half link between Bert Troutman and Don Revie, and he was the link for the Revie plan. Yeah. But it was a very workmanlike position. He was a workmanlike player. Mm. Peter was a dazzling outside left, outside right, with dazzling footwork and an eye for a goal.
And pace.
Very, very quick.
Yeah.
And who loved City, who had grown up as part of the club because his dad was there, and who Malcolm Allison, in his second coming, decided to transfer to West Bromwich Albion, at which point he disappeared off the face of the earth.
He went to Real Betis in Spain, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes, I think he did.
Yeah. I can't believe that no one has made any mention of the Cother brothers who played for Watford. Jack and Edwin. Now, Edwin, he was very talented, Edwin was, you know, and his career was ruined by criminal convictions. I'm not quite sure what.
No, but, come on, this is not fair to Football Ruined My Life listeners, because I'll just explain, and I'm sorry about this. You probably think John's finally gone off his head this time, but the reason for this is that Paul Kovrak, our producer, who's terribly self-effacing, refuses even to take a Hitchcockian cameo role in this podcast, has written about the Cother brothers, Jack and Edwin, because Paul is a Watford fanatic, and Jack and Edwin Cother, lads of Asian descent, according to Paul's super lift from Google. Jack was the first Watford player to reach a century of appearances. He went on to make 130. His debut, this is why Paul's worked it in, was the first ever game the Hornets played as Watford FC, and they beat Wycombe Wanderers 15-0. And this was in September 1898. Great stuff, Paul, but that's enough. Let's get back to Manchester. And Football Ruined My Life, as you know, observes government broadcasting standards of balance. So after Ken and Peter Barnes of Manchester City, I'd like to mention the even more spectacular case of John and John Aston.
Yes.
John Senior played in the 48 team that took part in the classic 1948 FA Cup final in which they beat Blackpool 4-2 for Manchester United. And then John Aston actually outshone his fellow winger George Best in the 1968 European Cup final in which Manchester United became, and it was man of the match, in which Manchester United became the first English club to become champions of Europe.
It was the best game he ever played for United. I mean, the crowd used to get on his back most of the time.
He played well in the semi.
He ended up going to Luton, didn't he? He went to Luton very shortly.
But that was because he broke his leg in a Manchester derby early in the following season. And that set his career back. He went on and did reasonably well at Luton. But as you say, the star that was born at Wembley that sweaty night.
He did play outstandingly well. But somehow some players do have this terrible ability to attract the ire of the crowd.
He did. I don't know why, because he was bred into the club, like Peter Barnes, and he was a good player. You say he had the game of his life, and that's absolutely true, at Wembley against Benfica. But he'd also done very well in the semi against Real Madrid. Did very well in the home leg, where they finally overcame their nemesis.
Well, they beat them 1-0, but actually the draw 3-3 at the Bernabeu was a greater achievement, frankly.
Where the
they were 3-1 down, weren't
where,
they?
Where the match-winning striker was lumbering Bill Foulkes. Yes. I can remember Johnny Aston Jr., because I spoke to him in connection with the book project. He said, of all the players I've ever played with in my career who are less wanted to be on the end of that pass from, it was Bestie. Rolled it infield. There's a great chance. And they thought, oh, Jesus, not Bill. Not Bill. And he side-foots it away like he's Lineker and Ian Rush rolled into one.
It was the first time he'd ever appeared in the opposition penalty area.
Yeah, absolutely. But he kept his nerve and stroked it in. Yeah.
They're also going back in history. One of Leicester's most famous players, a fellow called Sepp Smith.
Oh, yeah.
He was called Septimus because he was the seventh brother.
Oh, yeah.
And he came to Leicester having played a trial game at Northampton. I am looking this up, of course, where his brother Joe played. His elder brother Tom came with him. And then he played for Leicester in a semi-final of the Cup against Portsmouth, where his brothers Jack and Willie played. Mm-hmm. Now, two of those brothers were internationals. So there's altogether one, two, three, four, five, six brothers out of seven playing professional footballers there, which must be a record, I would say.
Well, carrying on the theme of the son being better than the father, you know, I think the same could be said of Jamie and Harry Redknapp, don't you think?
Oh, Jamie was a much better player than his father. His father was a winger, an okay winger.
He wasn't bad.
But never, I would say, got near international standard, whereas Jamie, I used to think, would have played a lot of caps for England, but injuries and so on. He never really had wonderful touch, Jamie, and looked a really good player.
Oh, lovely
he?
Technique.
When he was younger, yeah.
Yeah, Harry was different winger, but definitely better. Any other where the son comfortably outshines the father? Well, there must be millions when we've never heard of the father.
Yeah.
But I found when I was a journalist, you interview players and you say, well, who were your early influences? And they say, oh, my dad. You know, say if he's a Merseyside, oh, my dad played for Marine, you'll never have heard of him, but he was really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times the players, they don't come to public notice, but they were tidy players and they helped their son.
And of course, in the previous generations, especially ones after the war, a lot of fathers of players, their careers were destroyed by the war. They never went back into football.
Yeah.
As far as those siblings are concerned, is it nature or nurture?
Or is it the fact that they're exposed to good habits from an early age? You know, learn to kick with your other foot, you know, that kind of thing. If your dad was a semi-pro or something like that, you're exposed to really the best kind of coaching. So what is it?
Well, I think being brought up in the environment of professional football, it means it's not starry-eyed. You kind of see it and you're expected to be on that conveyor belt in a way. That's what the expectation is. It's very different coming from the outside at the age of 10, 11, 12,
what
13.
What about Stanley Matthews, whose son became Britain's number one tennis player?
Yes, he did.
That's a very unusual combination there, isn't it?
Well, Botham went through the same thing. I mean, Ian Botham's son, Liam, was a very, very talented cricketer, but didn't want to compete with his father and ended up playing rugby, as I remember.
Yeah, that's right.
And it can definitely put you off. I always think it's very, very difficult if they have a distinctive name, such that there aren't many Somerbys about.
No.
Therefore, it's known. Whereas if the name is Smith, or as we've mentioned earlier, Clark, it's not immediately, oh, he's there. You know, Leicester have a player on loan at the moment for Manchester City. His two grandfathers are Mick Doyle and
Glyn Pardo.
Yeah. Which is extraordinary. You would have thought he ought to be a real world beater. I certainly hope.
Well, I have a nostalgic like for him instantly because of his pedigree. Do younger players get on at a club because of nepotism? Because, you know, everyone's sort of expecting them to be as good as their father, so they're given more opportunity?
I certainly think there's a problem with managers managing sons. I would make it a rule that I wouldn't allow a manager to sign his son, because I think it can create all sorts of tensions and so on.
Well, Ferguson being an example, actually.
Yeah. Ferguson being an example, there was some tension over Nigel Clough, whose actually career was really at Forest.
Yeah.
When he went elsewhere, he really didn't achieve that
much. But Brian Clough never referred to him as anything other than the number nine, didn't he?
Yeah,
or our centre forward.
Yes.
It took a lot to embarrass Brian Clough, but I think he was a little embarrassed by that.
Yeah.
So it's a good rule, actually, that. Because certainly at Manchester United, it was quite preposterous, really, the number of games Darren Ferguson got in one particular season. And it must have caused trouble in the dressing room.
I think it did to some degree. I was told by McIlvenny that he always felt that that was Lady Ferguson's influence, that she was terribly keen that Darren got into the side. I think the other case was that it cost Nigel Pearson his job at Leicester when his son, who was not good enough really as a player, was taken on an away tour, well, a celebratory tour actually, to Thailand, and got into trouble with some prostitutes and so on. As a result of it, Nigel ended up getting the sack. You know, the sins of the son, let alone the father, I'm afraid, which always seemed to me dreadfully unfair.
Well, considering he'd done such a good job.
Yeah, I do think one has to be aware of that situation. And I always find it strange that football clubs aren't keener on keeping fathers and sons separate, because I always used to say, if I'm acting for a player, I always used to say to the parents, listen, my job is to be objective and do the best thing for your son. You are biased. You're entitled to be biased, and you actually should be biased.
Mm.
But that's why you're not actually the best person to advise them, because you will, unfortunately, have an emotional tie which blinds you to some things that need to be said sometimes.
I was very, very sorry for Nicky Somerby when, as I say, he joined City at the worst possible time. The chairman, you see, was Francis Lee. Now, Francis Lee had been Mike Somerby's best friend for ages and ages.
Yes.
And so obviously Nicky had known him since the day he was born. And the feeling within the players and within the club and within the fans was that Francis Lee was a disappointing chairman because he hadn't achieved the results that people expected because he'd been such a great player, which was in itself unfair. But Somerby got himself into a terrible cleft stick where either he sided with the players revolting against the upper management or he sided with his dad's best friend who had been Uncle Francis all his life. Very difficult situation. And the best thing he could possibly do was to go to Sunderland and get out of it, which is what he did.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot about fathers and sons. We've talked a lot about brothers. Is there a female player? Is there a sister of a current player or a recent current player who's playing women's football?
Yes, there is a young lady at Leicester.
Ah, of course.
By the name of Draper, who is the daughter of Mark Draper.
Who played for Villa.
And Leicester and Notts County.
Yeah.
And who in the recent under-17 tournament scored, I think, 6 goals in 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there will be. And there's Rhys James, isn't there? There's Rhys James' sister playing.
Yeah, it's natural, isn't it? Sporty families. I mean, you look at the Neville family. The sister of the Nevilles is a distinguished sporting person.
So does that suggest it's more genetic than environmental?
Well, not necessarily, you see, because if the parents believe in sport and encourage sport, it's like academic thing. The, you know, the more encouragement they get, the more facilities are made available. So it's terribly difficult to separate the environmental from the genetic and the nurture from the nature. I mean, if Neville, late father of all of them, all three of them, had been a great sportsman, he wouldn't be famous as a dad, would he?
Well, why would Neville's parents, given the fact their surname is Neville, call their son Neville without attracting all the approbation you'll get at school for the rest of your life?
I know, I was saying this to my daughter Barclay this morning, and...
Yes, and what about, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned the Brightwells.
Yes!
Well, there's a genetic, that's genetic.
That must be.
That's what suddenly came to me, yeah.
Shall we explain to people who are less than 70 years old why we immediately seize on the Brightwells? The father, Robbie Brightwell, was England's great quarter miler.
In athletics, you only have UK, Colin, correction. He ran for GB in the Olympics.
Yeah. Anyway, he was a great 400-metre runner.
And the mother.
Well, the story I'm telling is that Robbie was going to win the gold medal, had been expected to, and in his final he came third and won the bronze. Mm. And his wife, Anne Packer, who was not supposed to win anything particular, certainly not the gold medal, there was a French 800-metre runner who was better than she was and who had taken the lead. But Anne Packer had the energy coming round the last bend.
That's right.
And as she went through the tape, Robbie Brightwell was standing just off the track about 50 yards further on. And she went straight to him and hurled herself into his arms. It was very affecting. And so that when their two children, their two boys, David and Ian, become players in the 80s.
They'd have been all right, but for a lack of pace. Yeah, we know the story.
It was, but to an extent, they were not that quick. But there was something comforting about seeing a sporting family produce another branch, as it were, where they both existed so well.
There's also Arnie Sidebottom, who started a footballing career with Manchester United as a centre-half, became a cricketer with Yorkshire, and produced probably a much more famous cricketer in Ryan.
Yeah.
And indeed Bairstow.
Bairstow is another good example.
David Bairstow's father, of course.
So it seems to me that if you think about it, all children of professional sportsmen grow up in the environment of sport.
Yes.
And therefore, it will be a surprise if they weren't being nurtured from a very early age to enjoy sport, certainly to play sport. You can't control the talent. But then it strikes me that the ones who make it then genetically have, you know, it goes beyond the environment and beyond the nurture. There must be some basic talent somewhere that is just greater than somebody else who had played in the same team as the father would have with his children.
Well, it's probably straying slightly from the subject, but I was in a talk sport studio once in, I'd not place dropping, but it was just off Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro. And there was there was Darren Goff. There were a couple of footballs lying around the studio. He was out there as part of the Talk Sports team covering the World Cup in Brazil. He went up to one of these footballs and he was making it sing. And I said, where'd you get that ability from? I thought you were a cricketer. He said, oh, I could have signed for Barnsley. I didn't ask him if he had a brother, so you'll have to cut this out, Paul.
I think if we're going back to this nature versus nurture argument, the answer is we really don't know, because the same applies in all sorts of other cases. Bill Shankly always used to...
had a brother?
Yeah, Bob Shankly, yeah. But in terms of signing players, he always met the parents before because he got a good idea. And I, when I was taking on clients, I also found it advantageous to meet the parents. You got very good ideas of the values of the family and so on. It is difficult for some who are kids of really prominent players. They can be completely put off by the prominence of their father and not be turned on to it at all for fear of comparisons. Mm. So it's a difficult thing and it doesn't work in every case. But there can be no doubt, of course, that it does run in certain families. Mm.
The Shankly family, I mean, I said he had a brother to get in the fact that Bob Shankly won the league with Dundee and is the only manager who's ever done so.
And he wasn't the manager when they beat Cologne 7-0.
Yes, 8-1 actually, yeah. And went on to beat Sporting Lisbon and thank you, before unluckily losing 5-2 on aggregate to Milan, of Italy. But Shankly actually had, I think, six. There were six Shankly brothers,
yes,
all of whom made a living out of the game, which is extraordinary. And a couple of whom went on to become club directors after they finished playing.
So who is the greatest family of all then? The Milburns, the Shanklys, the Clarks?
Yeah.
All of those families, those dynasties, as it were, have great claim to have produced over generations and numbers of brothers.
But, I mean, the thing about the Shankly ones, it was more mass production. They produced lots of players, none of whom were as great as John Charles, who was an all-time great.
And who had a brother called Mel Charles.
And who had a brother called Mel. And Alan Clark was probably a better player than any of the Shankly brothers.
Mm.
But in terms of numbers, the Shanklys would be up there with the very best.
Justin Fashanu and John Fashanu were brothers.
Well, that's an amazing thing, because it can't have been, well, maybe it was genetic, but they were brought up by foster parents, weren't they?
Well, that's what I'm about to say. Yeah. It had to be genetic, because there wasn't the sense of the environment we talked about, but they both ended up where they ended up.
But probably, I mean, I'd like to apologise to all football ruined my life. You know, there must be dozens of listeners who are saying, yeah, you've forgotten about this family,
yes,
this
well,
family.
That. You know what, Paddy? They can all write to football ruined my life, all one word, at gmail.com and tell us exactly what we've missed out.
And, of course, you could also make out a list like Colin's brother did.
Right, okay, that's never happened before either, John. When you mentioned my brother, I thought, you know, we didn't really play much professional football together.
And as for Paddy's brother, who started the bank.
And as for John's brother, who was a wonderful detective.
No shit, Sherlock.
Right, well, I am saying to John and to Paddy, thank you very much indeed. We do absolutely do invite you to let us know your memories of footballing siblings by writing to footballruinmylife@gmail.com. I want to thank also our wonderful producer, Paul Kobrak, who is also doubling as an entire research team because he's given us such marvellous information about Watford that we're all absolutely thrilled to receive. And this is Colin Schindler saying thank you very much for listening. See you all next time on Football Ruined My Life. Well, Paul, what have you got for us this time?
Have you recorded it?
Yeah, I've recorded it. Thank you.